WILL's Illinois Newsroom. This is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. It's Wednesday, July 27th. Coming up, many Native Americans lost their connection to their own foods after centuries of colonization. Now, there's a growing movement to grow and forage for their traditional foods. We'll learn more in just a few minutes. But first, these headlines. Republican candidate for governor Darren Bailey is still refusing to answer questions related to last year's January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Hannah Meisel has more.
Bailey, who won former President Trump's last-minute endorsement before Illinois' June primary, has never publicly acknowledged Trump lost the 2020 election. And in the few times he has spoken directly about January 6th, he's openly doubted the insurrection was perpetrated by Trump supporters. At a press availability Tuesday, Bailey declined to assess the legitimacy of the January 6th committee, or its findings so far.
I'm not addressing that.
Bailey did, however, repeat his criticism of Illinois Congressman Adam Kinzinger, one of two Republicans serving on the January 6th committee.
I've made my statements. I don't agree with anything that Adam Kinzinger stands for.
In December, an activist involved with Bailey's campaign was charged with four counts in connection to his actions on January 6th. I'm Hannah Meisel.
At least one person is dead following the historic rainfall across the St. Louis region Monday night. Many others have needed water rescues, including about 100 people in the reserve at Winding Creek Apartments in the St. Louis suburb of Hazelwood. The apartment complex is just a few blocks away from Coldwater Creek. Camilla Cage and her daughter have lived in a ground floor apartment there since 2020. She says she noticed the sound of rushing water when she first woke up.
But I couldn't see it because I didn't have my contacts in. So then stepped out my bedroom door, felt the water on the floor. And instantly I start hearing more rushing water. So that's when I'm like, oh my God, my car.
Cage says the water was about waist deep by the time the fire department evacuated them. The lifelong St. Louisan says she's never experienced flooding like this anywhere she's lived. The University of Illinois has announced it will keep COVID-19 vaccine requirements this fall at all of its campuses. This comes 2 weeks after Governor J.B. Pritzker lifted his vaccine mandate for higher education. Illinois Newsroom's Emily Hayes reports.
University System President Timothy Killeen announced by email yesterday that students and staff must get their primary COVID-19 vaccinations or otherwise test for COVID once a week. Booster shots are optional. Tun Tang is a sixth-year PhD student at the U of I at Urbana-Champaign. He says he appreciates this decision. His own COVID-19 anxiety has reduced since his three-year-old got vaccinated this summer.
I tend to trust the vaccination a lot. I guess my trust is much, much higher than average. So I think when you have all the shots in, then pretty much safe.
Tang hopes those at the university continue to mask up, even though that has become optional at Urbana-Champaign. I'm Emily Hayes, Illinois Newsroom.
Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren says the conference will be bold and aggressive as college sports goes through sweeping change. The league added USC and UCLA for the 2024 season, and in remarks at the Big Ten Football Media Days in Indianapolis yesterday, Warren left the door open for more growth.
I get asked every single day, what's next? It may include future expansion, but it will be done for the right reasons, at the right time, as we will not expand just to expand.
Warren says the Big Ten is finalizing a new media rights deal that will go into effect next year, with an announcement expected soon. He dodged questions about what that deal could be worth, but some projections put it at $100 million annually per school. Still to come, we'll learn more about the effort across Native American tribes and communities for food sovereignty. That story from Harvest Public Media is next on 217 Today.
On June 19, 1982, Vincent Chin, a Chinese-American, was murdered by white men in Detroit. The resulting trial transformed the local Asian-American community and jump-started a national movement. To commemorate the 40th anniversary of the tragedy, POV is re-releasing Who Killed Vincent Chin, the groundbreaking documentary about the murder and its repercussions. The film details the initial eyewitness accounts, the ensuing trials, the ramifications for the families, and the aftermath. Learn how you can watch at will.illinois.edu/passport.
This is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. Native Americans have been growing food to feed their communities and connect to their spirituality and cultures for millennia. But colonization separated many Native Americans from their traditional foods. Now the idea of food sovereignty, or people having the right to control where and how they get food, is growing. And as Lauren Hines reports for Harvest Public Media, new formal programs to promote native foods are popping up across the Midwest.
At the Kansas City Indian Center, there's an indoor garden that holds dozens of potted plants, full of indigenous foods like elderberry seedlings and pawpaws. Assistant gardener JoJo Blackwood is watering the plants and notices the baby sumac trees are going strong.
Oh, as you can see, some of these have already started growing their own little leaves, their own little stems.
This is all part of the center's food sovereignty efforts, which focus on providing access to healthy, traditional food. Through the center's two community gardens and foraging classes, Blackwood and a few volunteers connect Kansas Cityans to foods they can find right in their backyards.
That's another big part of indigenous farming, is that, you know, you understand that all these are living things. They're not just like a thing you own, they're your relative. You help them, they help you.
In a 2019 study from the Food Security Journal, researchers found Native Americans make up less than 2% of the U.S. population, but they suffer from some of the highest rates of food insecurity, poverty, diet-related diseases, and other socioeconomic challenges. Heather Don Thompson is the director of the Office of Tribal Relations at the U.S. Department of Agriculture and a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe.
I think we have to be cognizant of the historical role that the federal government and the American people have played in displacing the indigenous plants and animals to begin with.
For instance, Thompson says the U.S. government tried to eliminate bison while settling America, which left Native American tribes without a food source and their sovereignty. And that impact is still being felt today. In Colorado, the First Nations Development Institute is helping indigenous communities find grants and other resources to connect with their own food. Ade Briones is the director of programs.
I think what we see now in food sovereignty is like this attempt to pierce some of the colonial structures.
Briones, who is Cochiti, Pueblan, and Kiowa Indian, says it wasn't until the 1930s that the U.S. government allowed indigenous peoples to participate in the American economy. Now, formal food sovereignty programs are emerging to challenge the entrenched colonial food system.
Whether that be like government regulations or economic disparities that prevent indigenous people from really building models of food system or participating in traditional models of food growing.
And indigenous organizations across the Midwest are taking matters into their own hands. The Quapaw Nation in Oklahoma has been at the forefront of building food sovereignty programs. Michelle Bowden is the agriculture and environment specialist for the nation, as well as a member. She says they're trying to increase the health of the community, economic resilience, and bring back cultural heritage.
I think that people really understand the importance of food sovereignty and the fact that we need to be, you know, pretty much self-sustainable and be able to take care of the communities that we live in.
In 2019, she and her team created the Quapaw Farmers Market after finding that people were having trouble accessing fresh food in the region. The market offers local products and traditional foods like Quapaw red corn and bison. Indigenous foods also help connect Native Americans back to a diet that's healthier and more nutritious than the current colonized diet. But to people like JoJo Blackwood, food is about more than just nutrition.
It really helps me like connect to my culture better. It helps me connect to my people better. I like to think that my ancestors are proud of me for doing this.
And Blackwood says now her main concern is helping her community and trying her best to be a good plant mom. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Lauren Hines.
Harvest Public Media is a collaboration of public media newsrooms in the Midwest and Great Plains, including WILL. It reports on food systems, agriculture, and rural issues. And finally, in your forecast, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard says it will be mostly cloudy today, with a chance of showers and thunderstorms and a high of 84 degrees. That's all for today. 217 Today is produced by Sydney Wood. Reporting today contributed by Hannah Meisel, Eric Schmidt, Emily Hayes, Mark Levine, and Lauren Hines. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Brian Moldine. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.